Hi there. I'm here today with State Senator Cecilia Kacik of New York's 46th Senate District. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Tom. Good afternoon, listeners. It's great to be on.
Thanks for coming on. You represent the 46th Senate District, which encompasses parts of Greene County and all the way up to the Mohawk River Valley. Isn't that right?
It includes all of Greene County, okay. A large portion of Ulster County, a section of Albany, Schenectady, and all of Montgomery County. So I go through five counties. It's about 3 hours driving end to end.
So that district was created, of course, after the last census for dubious reasons, I'll say. You don't have to say anything about that if you don't want to. But anyway, so you're running for re-election this fall against your previous opponent, George Amador, Jr.
Right. So let's be clear. This was drawn for George Amador.
Okay. That's what I was going to say.
But 2012 election cycle. This was a new seat that was added.
Yeah.
And clearly it was not drawn for me. But when I saw it, I said, I think this fits my candidacy and I think I'd be the best candidate to run for this district. So I decided to run, and I was the best candidate, and I was elected by 18 votes after fighting tooth and nail to get the ballots counted after the election.
Yeah, it was one of the more interesting elections.
Yes, it was. And so this is a new district, and I'm a new senator, so I've spent a lot of time getting around the district and getting to meet people. I've driven over 50,000 miles since I was seated in January of 2013. And it's been an amazing experience. And I've worked really hard. I have a great staff who've been working diligently and hard as well. We've met with over 1,000 constituents individually and organizations to talk about issues and concerns. And we've written lots of support letters for economic development projects and proposals. So we've been extremely busy, and I've also introduced a lot of legislation, and I'm very proud of the track record I've built up in just the 18 months that I've been a senator. And last Saturday, I announced my reelection campaign, and I was in three locations. I started out in Fort Plain in Montgomery County and had a stop in Guilderland in Albany County and ended the day in Kingston in Ulster County.
So a lot of driving.
Yes.
One of the things I noticed that you sponsored was a bill to ban the importation of fracking waste into New York State. Fracking is something that I've covered a lot on my show. Can you say a little bit more about what that bill would have done? I know it wasn't allowed to even get to the floor.
Sure. So I am in the minority in the Democratic. So I'm a Democrat in the Senate. We're in the minority, so I don't control the committee agendas, and we get an opportunity to have some of our bills go through the committee process, and I selected my bill to ban the importation of fracking waste, which is going on. And frankly, it's the part of the hydrofracking process that we need to be most concerned about, because there is a waste product that results from the drilling process, and that includes chemicals that are used and drill cuttings from way deep down in the earth. So we need to understand what it is that's being disposed of, what's in it, so it can be disposed of properly and safely. So the gas industry, as you know, is exempt from the clean water laws, so they don't have to disclose what chemicals they're using in the fracturing process. And hence, it can be called industrial waste, which to me is a misnomer. That's not really what's in there. We need to know what chemicals are being used. So since we don't allow hydraulic fracturing to occur in this state, it didn't make sense to me that we were allowing the waste product from this process that was occurring in Pennsylvania to be brought into New York and disposed of in our landfills or wastewater treatment facilities or spread on our roads. So to me, it made sense to put in a ban and just say, no, we're not going to allow the waste product to come into New York. So that's all my legislation did. It said the waste product from that hydraulic fracturing process that's occurring in Pennsylvania or outside of the state cannot be brought into New York. And so my legislation, I asked to be on the Environmental Conservation Committee. It failed on a vote of 7-6. All the Republicans voted against it. All the Democrats voted for it, and the sitting Republican chair of the committee actually said, I don't think this is occurring, which kind of surprised many of us that he didn't even realize this was happening. And in Pennsylvania, their version of the DEC, you have to say what you're doing with the waste product from the drilling process. So this is public information. They have to actually post on their state agency's website that's overseeing the regulation of that industry what you're doing with the waste product from this process. And so they say what landfills it's being sent to right on their website. So clearly it's going on. We don't know what's in it. And we're not sure it's being handled and disposed of properly. And I think we need to get our heads out of the sand and really pay attention to these issues and do what's right.
So about fracking in general in New York State, of course, there's been a moratorium for the past several years as studies have been, may or may not have been going on. It's not entirely clear what they've been doing. But our two senators have come out and said that Democrats everywhere are in favor of hydrofracking. So I was just wondering how you stand on the process.
Well, I find it very disturbing that, you know, our U.S. senators are saying that. I'm not saying that. What I'm seeing in the state Senate is an inability to get in place strong regulations and laws to really regulate if it does come into New York. And since we can't possibly put in place the laws to really regulate this safely, I'm dead against it, because this cannot be done properly if you don't force the gas industry to disclose, for example, what chemicals they're using. And the assembly, and this is called the Halliburton loophole that was done on a national level, the state assembly has been passing bills for several years in a row to close that loophole and to force the gas industry to disclose what chemicals they're using. That all that does is say, okay, if what's coming out and being disposed of is tested as hazardous waste and meets those hazardous waste requirements that are already established for every other industry in the state, then that product has to be disposed of as if it's hazardous waste. Because they don't have to disclose that, we dispose of it as industrial waste, and it's not, and some of this stuff clearly is hazardous, and we need to be very careful where it's going so we don't pollute our water and our streams and our environment. My opponent last time around, because he was a former assemblyman, voted on that bill and always voted it down whenever mm-hmm. it came up for a vote. We can't get, that bill has quite a few sponsors. I think it has a majority of sponsors on it in the Senate. We can't get it to the floor. That's not democracy. And when issues like that can't get done, it says to me, we don't have the political will and the, you know, assurance that this will be done with the average citizens in mind, and it's being done for other purposes. And I'll leave it at that, but democracy's not working, and we're not getting the right bills passed. So I don't think it can be done safely in New York.
So that kind of leads naturally into another question I had about another initiative you've worked on, which is public campaign financing. Of course, gas interests may have some influence in the state legislature via contributions. And by may, I say almost definitely. But, you know, you would probably know better than me being there.
All I can say is, you know, money trumps the process constantly. We see not just that bill, but many bills that have a majority of sponsors sometimes never make it to the floor because there's a few people who are holding up the process. And I think when you have a majority of sponsors on the bill, there should be an automatic ability to get that to the floor. But things are held up. There's another bill, Child Safety Products Bill, that would, it's also in the Environmental Conservation Committee, finally got passed out of committee last week. Hopefully it will get to the floor. It has 37 co-sponsors. This is a bill that would allow the DEC and the Department of Health to put together a list of chemicals that are of concern for the health and safety of especially young children, because there's a lot of plastic products that may have chemicals in that we don't want children to be exposed to, very young children. And I'm talking about, you know, a baby, if you give them something, they're going to suck on it no matter what you give them. So making sure that the parents understand this product might have a chemical in that I don't want to give it to my child. Maybe I've got rubber duckies in the pool for decoration. That's okay. But I need to be aware that this is not something I should allow my child to suck on, for example, because they may be able to get some of that chemical into their body, and very young children, it can harm them. It's that basic. We can't get that bill to the floor because, I don't know, somebody's opposed to it. But all it does is say, we're going to have a list of chemicals. We're going to alert families, and we're going to encourage the industry to not use these chemicals for these products. If we don't start educating ourselves about what we might have a concern with, we can't protect ourselves and our kids. And plastics are everywhere, but, you know, clearly when they're around very young children, we have to be careful of and make sure that, you know, when you go to the store and you're a young mother, you want to buy a product that's a pacifier for your child, you want to make sure that you're giving them something safe. So there's lots of issues sometimes that seem to be like a no-brainer, and there's broad bipartisan support for them. You can't get them to the floor. It's usually money that's holding it up.
Now, the recent budget had a public financing for campaign in it, sort of. Could you say a little bit about that?
Sure. So I think we have to do more to get the influence of money out of politics. There's a lot you can do to help move in that direction. I think what came out of the budget was, frankly, a joke. It really did not put in place steps that really removed the incredible influence money has. We can lower contribution limits. We didn't do that. We can close this LLC loophole, which right now a very wealthy individual can give lots of money through their limited liability corporations. So a wealthy landlord in New York City, for example, may have 10 buildings. Each one is a limited liability company. They can give donation through each one of those companies, but it's all one person. So there's ways to funnel money to campaign coffers that aren't obvious to the average citizen that allow certain, you know, politicians to reap the benefit of very wealthy individuals so their voices are heard more. There's things we can do in the system of how we elect people to office to combat that. We can also make it more strict on what you can use your campaign monies for, rather than going shopping or on jaunts or buying cars. There's a lot we can do to enforce oversight and give the Board of Elections real power and the ability to investigate, because they're so underfunded and our laws are so lax that, you know, there's a lot of really great opportunities for people with lots of money to influence the process. The average citizen, you know, doesn't stand a chance having that same level of interest or voice. So I've been a staunch supporter of campaign finance reform. There's many ways we can do that.
There's a recent survey of U.S. citizens that came up with a number. 96% were in favor of getting money out of politics, but 91% felt like it was never going to happen.
I understand the cynicism. It's one of the reasons why I decided to run, because we have to have voices there that say we can make it better. If we don't change the system, if we don't send people to Albany who want to change the system, we will never get the opportunity to get money out of politics. I'm an optimistic person, and I have full faith that people's voices, when they are involved and heard, they will be able to trump money. But if people don't care, if they don't come out and vote, if they become apathetic, you know, money wins. So I highly encourage people, if you're not happy, do something. Go and vote, for one. And if you have time, please help get good candidates in. And, you know, we all need money to run campaigns. and we need people to get involved.
You've had some pressure and criticism from both the Green and Working Families parties on your lack of support for the Farmworkers' Fair Labor Practices Act, which would reverse, you know, the decades of discrimination against farm workers, which was initially legislated as a result of the fact that many farm workers have been historically either immigrants and or people of color. So could you just say a little bit about why you aren't in favor of that?
So the farming is different than factory work, too. So you have a situation where the product is perishable and you're dealing with animals and weather. And the average day is not, one day is maybe you've got 10 hours of rain, so you're not working. The next day maybe is sunny and you're trying to get as much from the field as you can. So that the days are different on farm. And farm workers are often given a day off when it's raining. So the current bill does not really reflect that, you know, the overtime rules need to be looked at on a week-long basis. So there's more flexibility to be out in the field when you can be. And you have flexibility to not work when the weather's not cooperating. That, to me, is an important component of the farm worker bill. This is an issue that's been debated for 40 years. I want to see a bill that the farmers and the farm workers can both support, because if we change the farm worker legislation or put in place what I see that they're proposing, the cost of production can skyrocket. If the farmers can't produce a product that they can then sell and they can't recoup the money that it costs to provide that product to market, we're going to lose our farms. I have a lot of farms in the 46th Senate District that are relying on farm workers and family members and farmers. We're all working hard to get that product to the market. I need to see where we're doing this together. And I think pitting farmers against farm workers is not the way to do it. So I want to see some changes. I think we need to see a bill that both sides are working towards. Mm-hmm. I think there's a way to get there, but not this version.
So how would you change it to make it so that it could be supported by both farm workers and farmers?
Well, I think they have to work together on this legislation, and they're not. They're at opposite ends. So they've got to work and talk to each other and come up with proposals. I'm not going to solve the problem for them. I want to see them come up with changes. And I think if you talk to both sides, there's willing to compromise. I think they need to work that out and then bring it to the legislators. And I think there is room for compromise, and I hope that they do that.
So moving on to casinos, we recently learned the bid for a casino to be located at the Point in Catskill was withdrawn because of there's a lack of infrastructure. Now, there might be a casino in Albany County. I'm not sure if the proposed site is in your district or not, but
it is not.
No. Okay. So do you think a casino would have been net benefit to your constituents?
There are some areas in my district where they are considering a casino, one in Montgomery County. Mm-hmm. For example, and it's been my position that if the local municipalities and local residents want it to occur, then I'm supportive of it. And one of the things that I did is introduce legislation to ensure that local municipalities and counties had more opportunity to have their voices heard in this bid process. Because at the end of the day, this is a large development that's going to occur in a municipality, and there are pros and cons with allowing more people to participate in the gaming process. There's more economic activity, there's more jobs, there's also more social costs. There's more problem gambling. And how do you fit that development into a current community? What impact is that going to have on your roads, on your schools, on your sewer and water systems? What impact is it going to have on other businesses in the area? Are they going to lose jobs because people will spend their entertainment dollars at the casino gaming facility and not at the local theater any longer. So those are all issues that local municipalities have to talk about and consider, and they need to understand what the casino developer is proposing in their community. So my legislation said that there they had to have local sign-off. The municipality and county had to approve the proposal either through local law or a resolution. And while my legislation was not picked up by and passed on the floor of the Senate, it was included in the Gaming Commission's request for proposals in that they are looking for that local sign-off. So if you are a casino developer and when you submit your final bid, if you don't have that local community's approval, it's a dead on arrival. So that to me was a good role for me to play in making sure that the local municipalities had more of a say in the siting and development process. And things are moving really quickly. So it was, I think, important to get that as part of the process. So we'll see. We'll see where they go, and we'll be watching, what impact they'll be having.
So there's a movement against one piece of the governor's energy highway that I know of, anyway, in your district, the one in Athens, the West Point project that would involve running DC power lines from one side of Athens to the other through the middle of the downtown area. So where do you stand on that particular project and on the overall plan?
Well, I'm really disturbed that they want to bury the lines through the little village of Athens when clearly there was a more direct route to the river outside of the village, and disturbing the infrastructure of a fragile village to me is a non-starter. And they really, if they're going to move forward with this proposal, really have to move the lines elsewhere. And when I went to the hearing about it in Athens, the applicant, West Point Project Partners, actually said, this is not our preferred route. And they would like to be in the right-of-way, use the right-of-way for National Grid. That to me makes sense, but you have to get National Grid to go along with that. And I'm hoping PSC, if they're going to move forward on this, encourages that to happen. It's, I think, totally unfair to disrupt the economy and businesses in Athens for the sake of burying this line to help people get more electricity downriver. So I think the needs of Athens need to trump the need for downstate to get so much power, or at least, we have to help Athens, not be harmed in this process. And that's what I'm looking for. And I did participate in the hearing, and I did send a letter to the administrative judge, urging him to make sure Athens had the resources they need to defend against this project, and that they had enough money to hire the consultants and lawyers to help them with the rest of the hearing process, and that they really take into consideration the investment that the village of and the people who live there have in that community, and that not be harmed. And I think that if you're going to go forward, there's a way to do that without harming the village of Athens. If you can't do that, then it shouldn't go forward. So we'll see. But I have to applaud WGXC and the local community groups that have come together and really gotten involved in this issue. I think it's really, really important that the community weigh in. And I think the residents have done a really outstanding job having their voices heard. And it's places like WGXC, who are community radio, that educate folks about what's happening. So it's important to keep stations like this on the air and running. And I know you have a fund drive. You're in the process of a fund drive. So I wanted to just lend my support to helping you stay on the air.
Thanks so much. So where do you stand on the overall project, the energy superhighway or whatever it is that the governor wants to see? So the general idea is to bring all this energy from upstate down to the city. is it clear that the city actually needs this energy?
No, it's and that's a good point. And I brought that up in my letter to the PSC. It's not clear that we need to do this process. And that seems to be issue number one. If it's not needed, why are we doing it? Why are we doing all this disruption potentially to help downstate? And that has not been clear. I don't think that issue has been clearly made so far to date. So, you know, and we've weighed in on that particular point. And you're right. If we don't need it, why are we doing it?
There was a story not too long ago in the Times about a separate project that's already done to bring power from New Jersey underneath the East River. No, actually the Hudson. And they're having difficulty finding demand for the energy that they're bringing in that way. There's been some speculation, at least by me, but also by others, that it might have to do with the governor wanting to shut down Indian Point. Do you have any ideas about that?
Well, he has not shared that me.
In your daily morning lunch meeting?
No, so I really can't comment on, you know, what he's thinking and proposing down the road. But I don't think the need is being articulated and proven to be there for us to disrupt and, you know, inconvenience upstate so that we can get electricity downstate. And that's number one. You have to really identify that there is a need that can't be addressed without doing this project. So that's hurdle number one that I see the PSC having a hard time establishing. So we'll see.
Well, every time I see, you know, images of the garish advertisements in Times Square, I think it's just all worth it.
You know, we should talk about conservation and you know, maybe there's ways that they can save and reduce the amount of energy that they're using in Times Square and elsewhere in the city. And I think, you know, it's a mistake to just look at more, let's provide more supply without also looking at, let's make sure we're conserving and, you know, not wasting electricity also.
So I wanted to ask you where you saw the way forward for the economic development of the five counties in your district and for the state in general.
Well, my area is very rural and suburban. I have two small cities, Amsterdam and Kingston, and I cover a small portion, very small part of Schenectady. The rest is all pretty rural and small towns and villages. And one of the issues that comes up all the time is rural broadband access, making sure that people from their homes can access the internet. And if you can't access high-speed internet service, you can't work from home. And no one wants to buy your home, and businesses don't want to move in because so much is done on the internet, connecting with consumers, connecting with research, doing work from home. So that to me will do more to expand economic activity upstate than anything else. It's also a way to help our schools get stronger in the ability to provide adequate education when they can do more distance learning classes. Some schools can't do much distance learning because they don't have the internet speed capacity. So there's definitely a technology infrastructure that the state needs to help support and build. That's number one. Our agricultural backbone of this district is very important. We have 28 school districts. We have a lot of farmers who are supporting them because a lot of our school funding comes from property owners. So I have a lot of property owners who are farmers paying a lot of those school budgets. And they're often property rich and cash poor. So every time we cut state aid to our schools, we're increasing low property taxes on our farmers and our other business owners and property owners. So fighting for equitable and fair distribution of school aid helps reduce local property taxes and makes it easier for businesses to move in and get going. We also need to support our farmers And I'm really talking about small family farms and people who want to get into farming. And I was glad to see in this budget, because it's something I've been advocating for, there's a grant program to provide funding to people who want to get into farming. We have the next 20 years, like 70% of our farms are going to change hands. And we may lose a lot of small family farms in the process because they can't transfer their farm to the next generation. Mm. There's this huge focus on local food production and trying new models of getting food to consumers. And we have a huge appetite for food just downriver. And supporting our farmers to be more productive and grow more foods that are purchased by you and I, or being parts of models where we can connect farmers with their consumers more directly so that they don't have to go through a store, gives them more profit and more ability to grow what we want to eat. And people want to know who's growing their food that is being grown, and the people who work there are being treated fairly, and the animals are being treated humanely. People care about their food. So I'm seeing, that's to me is very exciting that there's this movement in that direction. The new Ag and Markets Commissioner, Richard Ball, I'm very excited about. He's my neighbor and a friend. And he ran a produce farm. And he was instrumental in helping to create a CSA, it's called the Corbin Hill CSA project. And some folks from the South Bronx actually bought a farm in the Schoharie Valley with the idea that they were creating a CSA. They bought a hilltop old dairy farm. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to grow anything up there but rocks. So there were all these vegetable farmers down in the valley. Richard was one of them. And they said, let's get together with you and provide produce that we're already growing as part of your CSA. They now help fill there's like 20 farms that fill a tractor trailer load of produce that's driven to the South Bronx every week and feeds over 1,000 families, and also provides food in soup kitchens and homeless shelters and low-income housing projects. And it's Schoharie Valley farmers, you know, feeding people in the South Bronx. He's now the new Ag and Markets Commissioner. Mm-hmm. So he's been part of this movement of trying to connect farmers with consumers. And he tells a great story about the same carrots he's putting in that tractor trailer load to feed folks in the South Bronx are the same carrots that go to a high-end restaurant in Manhattan. And he says that with a smile. So mm-hmm. there's, you know, I see a lot of opportunities for growth in that industry to help, you know, develop our economies upstate. When we grow more food locally, we're creating more jobs, and that dollar is cycling locally over and over again. So I want to see more of that. Anything we can do to support small businesses, I'm going to be there to support. We've helped a lot of small businesses in the area either get access to funding, know what funding that's available for them, and to connect them with organizations that do low interest loans. Anything we can do to support that effort, you know, we need to do. Clearly, we need to do more, and that's why I'm excited about my reelection campaign and hope that the voters send me back to the Senate, because I've done a lot in the first 18 months. There's so much more that I need to work on, and my attitude, okay, we got that done. What's next? And clearly, we can't get the state to be responsive to the voters and our communities unless we get some of the influence of money out of the political process. So there's a lot we need to change systemically so that we can get government to work more for the people. And that's overall something that I think will do more to help us help our communities than anything else.
So with the governor's recent statement that he's going to do what he can to overturn the Independent Democratic Caucus, the IDC, to get them out and get some Democrats who will caucus with the Democrats in the Senate. Do you feel very hopeful about positive outcome from that?
You know, I'm focused on my district and being the best senator that I can for my district and letting, you know, the voters know that I have their back and they have someone they can count on, that I'm the one they want to send to the Senate. What happens in other races, and we have an election and things are very close numbers wise in the Senate, in my opinion, you know, anything can happen. I'm certainly appreciative of the governor's interest in wanting to see more Democrats get elected. Hopefully the voters will make sure I'm one of them that goes back to the Senate this year, and we'll see what happens. But it's hard to say, you know, what's going to happen until the election season is done.
Fair enough. So anything else you wanted to add before we wrap up?
Well, I'm just really excited to be the senator for the 46th Senate District. I'm inspired every day by the people that I meet, that, you know, there's so much we can do when we work together, because we have to make sure that the government works for the people, that we do common sense legislation that helps our communities, helps our schools, helps our families. And I'm excited to be part of that process. So I hope the voters recognize that. And if people have a question about my policies or want information, that they are welcome to call my office. I have three of them, one in Albany, we have one in Kingston, and one in Amsterdam in Montgomery County. So please check out my website and connect with us if you have an opinion. There's only 2 weeks left of the legislative session. There will be a lot of bills going through. So if there's something you particularly want to weigh in on before session is over, you know, now's the time to do it.
And I'll put links to your Senate page in the show notes for this show.
Great.
Listeners can find it there on my website.
Great. Well, thanks for having me on. I really appreciated the opportunity to speak with you.
Thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule to talk with us.
My pleasure.